Shanghai. She's the author of Debts and Lessons, which was a finalist for the LA Times Book Prize in June. She has also received grants from the National Endowment for the Arts and the Fulbright Foundation. When not traveling, she lives in Marfa, Texas, where she co-edits Canarium Books. This year, she was a visiting professor in the MFA for Poets and Writers at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. She'll be reading a series of lullabies from Debts and Lessons, as well as selections from a work in progress, Telepathos.
Great.
Thank you. I think I can sit down. Okay,
yeah,
great. This is so relaxing.
We're going to get this thing rolling before you start.
Okay, cool.
You're rolling.
Right. Okay. Okay, so, yeah, I will begin reading. So this is a series of lullabies that I wrote that sort of fall towards the end of this book called Debts and Lessons. I won't read all of them. I'll read some of them and also a little sections from the maybe earlier parts. So, lullabies. For Percy Bysshe Shelley. For what offense the grave drew near, no crew remembers me. I felt the final inch around my feet. The sea, no more a child, did take me for its bride. This is for Hart Crane. Are these pillars or are these waves slicing my cheeks like scuds of wheat, eyelid by eyelid, dividing me? O thou, O hear these thornless stalks of air. There is no time to lose, no keeping more obscene. No, do not shout like that upon the sunlit limits of the night. Blindly pass, no work of words, survey the senate of our minds. For Frank O'Hara. Dear Frank, I'm writing you a letter with nowhere to send it. We've taken a room in San Felipe on the Calle de los Claveles. Separating the bedrooms are 15 paces covering the length of our courtyard. Purple jacaranda seesaw above us, and in the street, blouses dissolve like lozenges to release the natural color. At night we are carried out with our noses missing. Darkness spreads from person to person. Black hills outstretch the rugged profile of the soil. For Federico Garcia Lorca. The moon is an insect. The autumn wind brushes it away. For Paul Celan. Asylum is a dead man's word, brother. It is embarrassing to die. To see the sky below as an abyss, and hear its horny thrush of frost thread shadows on the sea. The sky so blue upon the water sings. Its grave is green, and through me runs the grass. But blindness does not furnish. Blindness brings night down to the blended notes that children in their classrooms sing. Brother, sunset after sunset, do we not walk through crocuses in bloom? The dead do walk upon their heads, and yet the headless one emits a bright perfume. God's rainbow do we sing, and singing did undress the serpents that we name. Brother, we are blessed. For Gerard Manley Hopkins. Whose thoughts are these we clothe? By cadence of Margaret, ourselves in the pageantry of nature's wood. A child who steps into the air, braids the congress of its kiss, sucking lace upon the lily locks, unfurls by what force? Father, if we weep for fortune, must we also take her eyes? The heart peels back its crimson soil, a wreath in which time unleaving did row back, backward its small current. For Guillaume Apollinaire. I have split my finger on the geranium. A drop of blood climbs out. I follow it drunk and staggering through the street, into alleyways among heaps of trash, clinging to blue branches as it multiplied, as it sat down on our trains and with our friends, a ring of smoke knocks on our door. Our eyes dissolve into the laughter, into chains of pure flowing hair. Volcanoes undulate, machines undulate. The wheat on Saturn mixes with the sorrow of our crocodiles. Do you notice anything foreign in me? My suffering has disappeared. For Vladimir Mayakovsky. War winding down street through our trenches, strong and naked, listen. If it's any consolation, I'll be dead soon. You can always pay somebody. The devil follows day and night. He is afraid to be alone, wearing me around like a necklace. Sets down his helmet as I raise my fist. This bug I'd squashed now turns to face me in the night. Mother, do you sing? Don't let us poets fool you. Our laboratories equipped only with illusion. Pity us. Fill your eyes with chandeliers. Cross the bridge to join the crowd. And this one is for John Berryman. Sing warrior songs, rain songs, sing the time, sing light, soil, stone, shade, sing rock songs, dream songs, sing Isolde in Tahiti, Faust in Haiti, lions, dolphins, manatees, sing. I saw my friend sing in the abyss. His singing did not carry me, but followed joint by joint, seesawing in the breeze, and there I saw him fall. Down he went. Darkness does not come to sing. Tethered like a comma to the air, broods on Henry's shy and spindly nerve. To meet a flower and suffer when it fails to bloom. Oh, jealous worm, does terror not also decorate? Mon frère, ballad of the air. Who could see you and forget the blue eye quivering from its root? Savage, smile upon these words and things and sing, for God's sake, savage, sing. A velvet coif of blonde falls from the bridge of your nose, and the tiny needle on the zodiac draws a tinier claw. Pillars of transparent fire, the poet lay underneath, rehearsing to make a grade at age 28. The prudential balm that summer brings, lacerations in the brain, a shrapnel of the dark, smears in night's stride, gleams the eye shakes from its grave, gradual self-loathing dark crumples in our clothes. Mon frère, ballad of the air. So now I'm going to read just a section in the middle called Nightfalls. And it's in five sections, and it's bilingual. One. 也许是不诚实的, Nightfalls, 这一首诗, Nightfalls, 失眠一阵, Nightfalls, this 春风 disquiet, 翻起人群中的幽灵, 白纸中的, relating to failure, I shake my hair, 一颗青墨核桃, 一颗 in the hollows, 无人理睬的核桃, of freedom, beginning to end, 在海中翻滚, is freedom. Translation. Maybe it is dishonest, this poem. Loss of sleep. A burst of spring wind stirs ghosts in the crowd. On this white sheet of paper is a blue walnut, a walnut no one notices stirring in sea. Two. 后来发现留在记忆中的, having finally fallen asleep 大大天空, in this other country for 8 months, 排除纸上的身意, I have been on holiday. 所像是自己的生命, 漂浮在绝对和孤独的翠影上。 Translation. And then discovering that in one's memory, the large, large sky removed from its deeper contents on paper is much like your own life floating above this lonely and absolute shadow of one's spit. 3. 拼命拥抱沙漠里散出的血味, the darkness I wipe now, 沙沙的春风, from my nose, friends I can almost, 沾上纸, call out their names, 时下河水, life hangs down, 所取笔原形, the branches of memory hang down, 花儿无骨, 一笔一笔, it was summer, 抹开着不真实的光线, and I could see the reflection of everything. Translation. In the desert emitting this blood smell, I hug and hug. Whoosh, whoosh, spring wind stirs sticks to paper. A rock slipped in a river asks the pen to restore it. Flower without bone, stroke after stroke, rub away this unrealistic light. 4. 好青婆,你变成了一只刺猬,从一本很薄的诗集匆忙地爬出来。听我说,世界上没有痛苦,没有失落,没有欺骗,没有疲倦中的空隙。在一个森林里,我们赛跑。我问你,为什么不穿鞋子? 你笑,笑了好长时间,亮亮,你口袋里的黑影马上要追上了我。 For as shadows of ourselves appear as grass upon the grass. Translation. Grandmother, you've turned into a hedgehog from a very thin book of poems hurriedly crawling out. Listen to me. In the world, there's no pain, no loss, no dishonesty, no emptiness from exhaustion. In a forest, we race. I ask you why you're not wearing shoes. You laugh, laughing for a while. Lin, the darkness in your pocket is catching up to me. 5. Emptiness, as it seemed to me, a long time had passed. The clutter on one's desk, as above all, is emptiness. I'm sorry I could not keep you in my mind. I am a bad person. My heart is so light. Okay, so this last, I'll just read the beginning of this sequence that I am writing, which is called Tournesol. And it is, I started writing it, when my grandfather died, or after the death of my grandfather, who for the most part raised me, or very early on, and then after he died. But this I actually sort of couldn't write about it. So this is actually writing about the birth of Issa, but then sort of he'll come in later on. So it begins with you, Issa, although it's not necessarily about her either, I guess. Tournesol. She is floating and I float with her, in the middle of nothing, in no shadow, the unconscious. What is it? A voluptuousness? Sun, como huevo. Before this moment, the curtain over the window had been stuck and the entire moon was showing. And then I was born, phosphorescing. I am born inside the verb which may or may not have happened, which may or may not be definitive. Why? I am born. No, not yet. This morning I woke up tied to the other side of the earth. The clock on the wall had stopped. It was moving, but several hours behind. It was midnight, noon and also midnight. I am beginning, but this has always been true. This morning, standing over myself as one does, a kind of poverty, to be born from nothing. In the meantime, I am alive, and my living brings me close to everything. Streets, corpses, grief, sun. Here in the beginning, in the first drop of blood, eclipsed by a butterfly. Today, touching life at its softest, most difficult, what will people say? These women attending to my birth on the other side of the afternoon, rising, falling, rising curtain. This window I imagine to be the dangerous hole life opens from this first moment, the temptation to exist, to be born from nothing. From this first moment, it cannot be true today, this very first moment through which life passes unprotected by its beginning. Today, I touch, tokar. It is a memory, this desire to live, to be fully formed. In the labyrinth of a teardrop on the 17th of December at 6:07, I began to drink, alive and without humiliation, for the first time. Onigiri, I shout, calling after her. She who is my grandfather, in the spirit world, wandering between man and woman. She, he, I follow. He who is out of season, climbs slowly up the mountain. His transparency in this moment, between the one and the two, it is the smell of childhood. Okay, so I'm going to stop here. Thank you guys so much. Thank you.
I'm going to sit too so I can put this introduction into the podcast, and I'm having this green piece of paper for you. Joshua Edwards directs Canarium Books. He's the author of Castles and Islands, Architecture for Travelers, Imperial Nostalgias, and Compassion, a photo book, photographs taken at 1 hour intervals during a walk from Galveston Island to the West Texas town of Marfa. He's received grants and fellowships from the Fulbright Garcia Robles Program, University of Michigan, Stanford University, the Academy Schloss Solitude, and elsewhere. He'll be reading poems written for collaborations with artists, including Charlotte Moth, whose first U.S. solo exhibition is currently up at the MIT List Visual Arts Center, and excerpts from a recently completed verse novella, Agonistes.
Thank you, Amanda, and thank you all for coming. This is going to be a lot easier than it was for Lynn, because Issa really likes Lynn. And
Issa, come here.
Why don't you go to Mama, and I bet she has some special treat for you over there. Yeah. So I'll begin by reading some of these poems for... three of which were written for films by Charlotte Moth, who we met in Germany when we were at the Academy Schloss Solitude. I wrote a series of poems for a couple of films of hers. These three in particular are for a film that is it's about this industrial town called Marl, which is in kind of north. Western Germany, and her film is sort of a study of the modernist architecture and like some strange architectural spaces that that are now used for art and industry. And then there are four more of these in this series, which were sort of written toward her work, and they're all united by the work of John Ruskin. So they're based on his Seven Lamps of Architecture. The Lamp of Sacrifice. You and I know when one keen pyramid with wedge sublime pavilions the upended surgeon's grave. We've smelled that dirt. In the reader's unwashed eye, there's a Broussard hacking his way to a proper definition for the word after lifetime. Thus the tan and muscled figure knocking at our door. Don't open it, my dear. He may be just a shadow, but the door itself is dangerous. And to stay with me forever in this domestic rank would make an engineer so proud. Or else let's go be useless someplace. The tropics as adornment where we may disappear into an attending atmosphere. The Lamp of Truth. Setting sun, moon rising to light the two buildings as structures might be lit. Columns bright against a winter sky. Gray smoke climbs in harmonic braids from the stovepipes of lesser buildings. A figure present in the landscape confirms by its presence that knowledge begins when belief finds form. Another form of belief ends in another place, abstracted somewhere, in the horizon's empty space, as a faint shape, some painted frame, or else a static square of vapor. The winter sky like a pane of gray glass, those buildings there secured against shadows as suns rise, moons set. The Lamp of Power. Gathering and governing, the eye like a barrel of oil, a potted plant, a column in a field of many grasses, lion among lions, sculptor of idols, prophet of hunger, plinth of shadow cutting across pillar and forest, the eye as an enormous wall that divides a landscape, majesty and judgment, horizon from dilemma, the bird upon the eye beneath the bird. When sunshine at an angle specific to a range of days relieves the burden of surfaces, the azure skies and distant palaces surpass the calm with questions of survival. The only places to end this are in a cave or on the ocean where the eye is poor and pure. The Lamp of Beauty. I remained in the darkness to find freedom, but shadows filled with beauty pierced my mind, and I had to go back. I have trouble with things that are beautiful. Crystals are pure arrangements. The sea is impossible. Delicate flowers and arabesques have the gravity of lightness. The mysterious earth expands into a sublime heaven. Music is a fight with jeweled swords. I think of beauty, and time is lost. If only it would teach us something, not merely be regarded. I am a gargoyle. Although I do not see color, the rainbow is a zebra. Color can see me. Natural beauty, human beauty, beautiful forms, and even the ugly monster of beautiful poetry disturb me. I suppose nothing can be done. The Lamp of Life. The inseparably composed, sweet and vivid energies of mind and imagination will be lost among bones. Reader, is life a pickpocket? Is it a temple for or the apex of struggling? Is vitality art? What is between the living and the dead? A little door? A terminal? A hair's breadth of anything? Reader, readers vanish. Every reader is thus only a dream of the reader. Think of the 11th century. Imagine a Byzantine stranger. Imagine the fearlessness of medieval children. Heartless, they had to love everything. We read poetry, but people change. Look, there's a memory. It is lifeless. Perhaps the question to ask is this: while living, how much of the world vanishes away? The Lamp of Memory. The writer looks back year by year, star after star, ever and anon. I came out singing, sailing, and gliding on beauty. The writer remembers the river hills and flowers. I lived like a landscape with a large glacier in its midst. Let us imagine him in stone, devoted to a life of posterity and the idea of the future, watching the waves, the passing waves of humanity outlasting the world. I believe in objects more than subjects. Art is the failure of the subject. Objects are true. His mind becomes itself a subject, subordinate to a twisted sense of historical proportion, clinging to sublimity and preservation. I think of my life as a skeleton and modern times as a funeral. I belong to the future, like a green sea, like the sun, like the sky. The lamp of obedience. Phantom of phantoms, universe of darkness, river of heaven. Evil and beauty, sun and moon, art and dreams. Power as law, laws as nation, nations as work. The garden is strange sometimes. Marvelous things are about to come to pass as language changes and the character of the world is harmonized. Wild lives and recklessness, idleness and pleasure, another place and one another. More home with less habit, better qualities of light, lovely days on the earth. Travelers living in a school, photographers in a landscape, lovers in loving. The snowflakes fall into drifts. I am exhausted from dreaming and have stared too long at a book. Quote, man is a shop of rules, a well-trussed pack, whose every parcel underwrites a law. Lose not thyself. So I'll read a couple more that are related to art, and then I'll read a section or two from this Agonistes book. Filmic sketches. What will remain in 100 years of the green leaves against a blue like the sky but not of the sky, or a purple blush edged sharply, or of stones, sea, songbirds, buildings? Which hands and which forms reflected, like the geometrical chair and table, will continue to instruct upon how to hold or how to draw? A young person learning color and form for the first time selects green and purple, blue like sky but not of the sky, and sets down the sea, some stones, then bursts into song. The interior overcome by a flower's blush, while the fiction of a frame conceals a shadow's depth behind podiums before removal. To speak of ceilings as stages, there again is green, several greens, and always the question of form. Outside is the river, and here a window doubled by a mirror. What will remain in 100 years of these backdrops and their shades, of such recent things as us? Travelogue. Halfway to the end of a path covered in snow, bells toll the wrong hour. Eclipse. Of night, we can say it is the beginning. A week here, the sky turning, an unseen cradle by the quarry. And I wrote that poem with Lynn, I should say. So. Views of unknown Oslo. The sea nearby is in the air, and the smell of fire too. Nothing so still as an abandoned trampoline. Nothing more supernatural than flourishing topiary sculpted against a backdrop of deciduous trees in late autumn. Rocks angled in epitome to epigeneric movements. Land emerging, sky and ocean like rival scholars deciphering the same ancient text. The moon and sun align and a spring tide rises. Misremembered room illuminated by light from an articulated window in a wall that curves in the manner only of institutions or history. Curtain behind which darkness holds the memory of a suitcase. For every wall, an idea of climbing over. For every architecture, some conspiracy of nature to destroy it. In the correspondence between natural beauty and time's terror, such declamations as a shelter for holding gentler plants, a staircase and its passage to go down into where from one comes up, to enter the tomb of human curiosity. Yeah, and I think now read one more tiny poem and then Premonition. The sea is almost the ocean as it is cooled by crowds of dreamy ships. Green water falling in a desert meditation. Landscape, if there were such a land. So this is, I'm going to read a couple of sections which have changed a little bit since this version, but of this manuscript called Agonistes, which is sort of a, I guess it's definitely, it's gained an element of political parable in the past few months. And so I've been like reworking it. The character has always sort of been this like inversion of anarchism. So he's an anarchist in some senses, but he's the inversion of anarchist because all of his kind of powers are negative instead of hopeful. So the only thing really to know is that he's an anti-hero and he's created this machine which he thinks will cause the end of the world, and specifically by bringing a comet into Congress with the Earth, as he says. So, and yeah, the story kind of unfolds like a classic tragedy from there. But this is the second section of it, which describes his backstory. Wrap yourself in a cloak of autumn. See evergreens and fog around you. Look down at a trail of blood on the forest floor. Follow it to a crying child, hands pressed to forehead, trying to hold pain at bay. Thenceforth, he grew up fearful and forlorn, hero of a nasty Bildungsroman. Victim of the forces of conception, that youth was mine 20 years ago, and my voice is the voice of that little boy. I was 13 in 1991. I had just arrived at the orphanage from the streets, where at least I'd known my place and the secret warmth of the ungoverned. On the outside, I had been cared for by people who lived in a state of merely, and they guarded me in my blamelessness. But when I arrived at that place designed to protect me, I joined a crowd whose mind hunted purity and exalted spoil. Their leader, a giant boy named Art, whose teeth were the color of a yellow dog, hated the way I spoke. The lively words I found in books offended his dull ear. I tried to explain to him how my life had mostly been spent in libraries and beneath overpasses, that my mind was a native of the lands and classic tales. Biography evoked no sympathy. In fact, it probably made my plight worse. So then I'm going to skip ahead to one of his rants. In this world of parasite mechanics and waitresses who cannot get alone and professors lusting after tenure and schoolchildren fighting in the schoolyard, where is the place for one such as myself who doesn't like to drive, who cannot bring himself to tip or even tip a hat, whose mind is too flighty for academe, whose fight is against the schoolyard itself? The heart's inquiring vacuum wants to know. Yes, who am I and wherefore do I rage? I'm an animal made out of people, and all I have ever wanted is to eat well and to live quietly in a corner that I might call my own, beyond the great archive of voices and knowledge of our sad contract of self-annihilation. But like some creature turned white by winter, I have become the very essence of that from which my instincts would have me hide. I have grown tired of the spirit of yet, and the world of the world is your oyster. I spent years refining my thoughts, writing haiku in cuttlefish ink on handmade paper, drinking tea traditionally. And while this is only a metaphor, it is true that I once cared to measure out hope in syllables as delicate as a child's first haircut, and that my heart aspired to beat on though it was broken. Eventually, I was overwhelmed by the din of daily interactions. Only atop mountains do I still find joy. It appears there as in a mailbox. But enough about me. Let's talk about us and our splendid anonymity. We are the strangers who will never meet, although we often amble side by side. And when we see each other in the street, we cough or whistle and avert our eyes. What strange behavior for two similar genetic strands ordered in two people's greatest moment. At the apex of all the world's pretension, we remain ciphers to each other, even unto ourselves. You and I were made to live with limits, and well within them we have made our lives. Even our bodies cannot shake the past. Take, for example, the useless hair of our arms and surrounding our private parts. Examine our questionable faces, weak bodies, awkward gait, inept organs. It is more than a marvel that we thrive. We can be killed by light, heat, cold, water, not enough or too much of anything. We can even choose to kill ourselves to get back at the Godhead or our own loved ones. We are dark and often nasty creatures. Still, we are without a doubt the earth's fruit, although long ago ripened past our prime. So we are deranged by our own sweetness. We have seen ourselves in the suffering of Prometheus, Sisyphus, Atlas, and a myriad of hungry ghosts and martyrs damned by those they thought once loved them. There is no place upon the table for flowers until the hungry have been fed. Let us feast together before we die, or at least consider what a word like feast must have meant before cholesterol. In our discreet rooms, let us imagine our beginnings when we gathered around an enormous bonfire and shared the flesh of some great animal we could never have killed alone with our primitive tools, when we all stooped over tide pools and laughed at the shapes of creatures produced therein. When the clouds above us burst into flame, let us think of those antiquated joys and the time when we knew a selfless need. I have heard your lovely voice lilt in song, and seen you skip along the same sidewalk your children signed when it was wet cement. So many summer days have warmed your face that you don't even notice anymore. You are my decent and many neighbors, and it is for your beautiful ideals that the truth must be destroyed with a kiss. Is there any better euphemism for beauty collapsed in one harsh moment? How can we live knowing that the fireworks we enjoy on the horizon mean war? It must all have a better end than this, an end of onwardness and astonishment. I have weighed the risks. My reasons are sound. There is equanimity in my heart. I have always been drawn to helplessness. The moon is full on a cold autumn night. I use such lines of melancholic hue to stave off my own deep melancholy. So I'll read one more. It does have sort of a happy ending, which I'm not going to get to. But I'll just say that it has kind of a happy ending. It at least has some happy ending for the narrator. He falls in love, and there is this the classic kind of twist of the tragedy. But he feels better, at least, I should say. This is another rant, though. This is still pretty early on. To fuck a god out of the sky, one must dream of roses blooming in the springtime, then break a vase upon which is painted a scene of waning romanitas and a woman waiting for her past to fade. Because we think ourselves too far along, there are things that can no longer be made. Victorian carriages, Fabergé eggs, beauty, verbal prophylactic charms. The future has no thought of balustrades. Before their voices devolved into streams of echolalia and suffering, a few rich snobs turned poor saints said that if a man is who he would have others be, then he may have some power over them. Thus speaks religion to philosophy, philosophy to government, and gods to preachers, preachers to fathers, fathers to sons, and sons to mothers, virgins all, who bear witness and mourn their shameless boys. My own tears mimic archaeology, as does my desire to possess the past, as if things were only their adornments. That vase without the warm blood that filled it, vast cathedrals empty in the same way, and even philosophy's strange questions poured out of the earnest skulls that hold them. Living only for what's gone as I do, my life is a mnemonic pilgrimage to a dismantled desert monument. Moving toward an image, I lose faith and what that image might return to me. So I turn away from what I witness, like a sailor going blind from the sea. The best guides descend into some darkness before they find a means to treat the light and follow past the roll of the setting and rising sun, away to more obscure and breathtaking views than the smug grandeur that the proclaimed names of things allow. With a heart the color of bitter wine, yet still undeformed by grief of knowledge, I spent many years trapped in the idea that bridges could be built by promises, not knowing that words themselves are too false, and mankind's tale is told in children's dreams. Isn't a bridge best appreciated as it recedes against a rising sky for the falling person who has given up the dream that a river's splash awaits them? Traumas of the grave are the cradles too, our lives bookended by these empty thrones. History rejects all enlightenment, but the votaries still lay claim to truth as if it were more than idolatry, and misery would melt with their candles. The blue sky is supported by mountains. Heaven is held up by columns of sin. Do I see enough of what surrounds me? I am modern, but is my tragedy? My pocket watch grows warm within my fist. The chain that tethers it to my waistcoat hangs between us like the leash between Androcles and his lion as they strolled through Roman markets and were showered with flowers and money by trembling gawkers. Sometimes the tick of my watch and the pulse of my veins strike at once, and it's as if two opposing forces have grown so far apart they join together and gain strength. How much better to be anonymous and to hold time, and by holding it hide, like a famous actor watching a film she starred in before she was a star, hides from all aspects of time but hopefulness. And hope is the philosophy of birth. What is birth if not the birth of a mouth? And what is life if not vocabulary? And what is death if not a final word that stretches out into eternity? For in a word or in the act of speech, there may play out stellar eternities of birth, life, and death, searching for new mouths to be born from, to burn in, to die for. A faint image arises in me now of a row of hotels along a lake. I see them as if through a pane of glass, witnesses without anything to say, standing in the haze of their unknowing on the last day of a millennium. I was working in one of those hotels as a dishwasher in a restaurant. I found the view there suited for watching a new world unfold without the modern failings of which I so often complain. Of course, no sensational freedom came. So there and then I began my study of civilization, astrophysics, and the power of positive thinking. It took me years, but I found an answer. Thank you guys again.